I want you to center back in. If we were living 500 years ago, and Martin Luther's life has just been transformed by the idea of grace. He's just finally founded the book of Romans, and this revolutionized his view. He looks out in his Christian world and he realizes, nobody gets this. Nobody gets this. And he starts bringing that idea of grace back into the Christian world. And people look at him with their eyes glazed over like, that seems so complicated. I don't know. I don't understand it. And yet he realizes, This is the whole thing. I know these ideas. We should have been hearing these ideas ever since we hit third grade. They should be something so familiar to us that we just go, yeah, this is relationship that's within God. This is what's there. But it's not. I've taught these things to pastors, and they go, I don't get it. I know it's not familiar to us. It's like the ideas of grace would be to the people back in Martin Luther's day. But I'm telling you, I have become utterly convinced in our day, this is what Martin Luther would be teaching. This is the answer to everything that our world is wrestling with. So if you go, I don't know, it seems so theoretical, it just seems like theology, I don't know, I probably don't even need any of this stuff. I'm just going to go, we're going to draw all this back down to extremely practical stuff. But I just want to share with you guys, I know there's a wrestle here. I know there's a wrestle here to get this stuff to fall in place in your brain. I'm asking you to wrestle. I think what it will bring you and give you is so profound. It will unlock so many things. God is love. Now, to a 15, 16, 17-year-old boy, you know, that sounds like a weird hippie statement almost. But the fact that that's fundamentally what's in there is so foundational to everything we connect with in God. God is love. You can trust Him. You can trust Him. He's solid. He's real. There's something you grab hold of there. And that love is happening within Him. That's why He doesn't need you. He didn't make you because He had to have somebody to like, or had to have somebody to like Him. He's got light going on within Him. If you wanted someone to like Him, you would have made someone way more important than you. Way more important, way more glorious than us. If He was looking for someone to build up His ego. What He was looking for is He's looking for someone to share that. And we are invited into that. That's why in John 17 it says, Jesus prays, Father, I want them to be in us. Just like I'm in you and you're in me, I want them to be in us. This is the one I want. Let's just share this thing. Let's share it. And that's the Christian life, is to walk with Jesus. But we don't see Him, and it's so hard. It takes so long to figure it out. But that's what's going on. Jesus wants to walk with you. But right now, what we're after is understanding what is going on in God. And what's going on in God that's always been there, and when the whole world melts and even if everything else always ends, it's what's still going to be there. What was there in the beginning will be there in the end. There is love going on. There's this thing going on that is incredibly complete. And it's happening in a complementary way, because that's the greatest way love can happen. Egalitarian love has boundaries. Complementary love completely consumes both sides. Both sides bring completely what they are. It's the greatest way it can happen, so that's what it's happening in God. And God made a picture of that. Actually, He made lots of pictures of that on the earth. And if you're in His image, guess what? There's probably lots of ways He's going to roll that through you. So we're going to just look at a couple more of those. So this is what's there. And then again, my two phrases that capture this for me is, one takes responsibility for and the other unites with. Those are the two sides that's happening in there. And we can see that in other places. So God calls Himself a king. So he likes, apparently, that picture. Somehow that captures something. There's kings, there's subjects. What does a perfect king do? What's a perfect king do?
Rules justly.
He rules justly.
Protects.
He protects his subjects.
He listens to his subjects.
He listens to his subjects.
He does what's best for him.
He does what's best for his subjects, a perfect king.
Provides security.
He provides security for him. What does the perfect subject do? Or subjects?
Obey.
They obey?
Honors and respects.
Honors and respects?
Serves.
Serves? Can we take this and map it over? A perfect king is responsible for. Perfect subjects unite with. And they make a country possible. Why is a country possible? Because all the subjects unite with. And the king leads, and the subjects follow, and there's just a profound country. God made that. Okay, what's another one? Well, God calls himself a master, calls himself Lord. We can go master-slave. That's a little scary in our world, although there's ways to put that in a way. I think it's good. But there's employers-employees. What's a perfect boss? How many of you guys have jobs? All right, so you know what a perfect boss should be like. What's a perfect boss? Give me the perfect boss.
Understanding.
Leads by example.
Leads by example.
Clear.
Clear.
Big vision.
Big vision.
Authoritative.
Authoritative.
Empowering.
Empowering.
Firm.
Firm.
Not focused only on money.
Not focused only on money. But what should he do with money? What?
Invest.
Invest. And for you, what do you want out of that money? He should pay you justly. Yeah. He's to bring good to you. His responsibility is to bring good to you, to care for you, to provide for you, to create an environment through which you can be provided for. Okay, what's the perfect employee?
Hardworking.
On time. What?
Hardworking.
I didn't guess it said
hardworking.
Hardworking. Yes, hardworking. He brings his best. What else?
Doesn't complain.
Doesn't complain.
Honest.
Honest. Okay, so you know where I'm going here. God created, again, he created the king-subject relationship. That's an institution. It's in the Bible. He created this master-slave relationship. These some of our pictures, God doesn't seem to create egalitarian relationships. Everywhere he creates something, he creates somebody that's responsible for and someone that's responsible to, someone that entrusts. He just keeps making it. Even older brother, younger brother. There are egalitarian relationships in the Bible, but there's just not very many, and there's no institutions like that. He loves this responsible for, unite with picture. You know, why does he love it? Why does he love that picture? Who has heard a thing I've said? Why does he love it?
Because that's who he is.
Because that's who he is, that's what's in him. He keeps making himself. He keeps making himself. Why is that important? Because that means when I'm in authority, I know how I'm supposed to act and what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to use my authority just like I'm representing the picture of the Father. My authority is supposed to bring good. Whether I'm a general in an army, whether I'm the boss on a job, whether I'm a husband, whether I'm a father, my authority is to bring good. And when I'm the employee, when I'm the son, when I'm the soldier, my responsibility is to unite with and bring all that I've got to make the man who is responsible successful. And in that, I can imitate God. When I am in the role of the follower, I get to be like Jesus with the Father. When I'm in the role of the leader, I get to be like Jesus with his disciples in the world. He was in both roles, and so are you. You just go, okay, what am I responsible to do here? Am I responsible to support, or am I responsible to lead? And in almost every scenario you'll ever find yourself in, you will be responsible either to support or to lead. You are to step into both of those, whichever it is. And where does our whole world go? Well, I don't really want to lead unless it's leading me, and I don't want to be responsible, but I don't want to support. I just want to do my own thing. And God goes, I am not in that. That is not me. Everywhere I'm at, I'm either leading or I'm supporting. I'm either responsible or I'm uniting. There is a beauty and a glory in your humanity in that. What it means to be human, what it means to be a man, is in that. Okay. So, let's go back to the mystery. Is God a man and a woman? No, because he's not a father and a son either, and he's not really a king. He doesn't wear a crown. Well, I guess he does wear a crown. I'm not sure that works, but anyway, he's making his selfie here, and he made it in male and female. He's made it a bunch of other places too. So where is it in male and female? Well, male and female were created as the expression of the us dimension of God's nature. That seems like that's the case. The responsible for and united with dimensions of God's relational nature were created in male and female. It's like, there it is again. Okay. How do we know this pattern is there? Like, so it doesn't tell us in Genesis 1 that the man is like this picture of masculinity. It just says there's a male and female. So how do we know that you guys as males, how do we know that there's really something about who you are and how you're made that puts you in a position by default, not in every scenario, but kind of the default where you step into, what you bring, where your initial place is a position of being responsible? Is that really true? Did God really do that? Is all this really real? I wouldn't just turn to Genesis chapter 2. And again, I spent a lot of time in these chapters. For me, I'm utterly, absolutely, completely settled that when I read these chapters, I'm reading about me. I'm reading about my history. God's talking to me about who I am, and I believe he's talking to you about who you are. That is so clear to me. And I realize that most Christians don't have what I have. They don't get that. As a matter of fact, the reason you don't hear this being taught all over everywhere is most intellectual Christians are scared to death of Genesis. And every answer they need is there. And they are scared to death to go there and bring a deep intellectual pursuit of the Christian truth. And everything our world needs is cut off from them. So, Genesis 2. This is fun. Okay. So God makes man. You guys remember Genesis chapter 2? What happens in Genesis chapter 2? Genesis chapter 2 is a little odd. Like everything in the Bible, the Bible's really weird. Totally weird. If you think it's normal, you never know. Genesis chapter 2, we get a zoom in. So either Genesis chapter 1:26, let's make man in our own image, and then so in the image of God, and then you got all chapter 2, and then you go in the image of God he made. Chapter 2 goes right in there, right in the middle of Genesis 1:26. That's all of chapter 2. Let us make man, then he tells us how in chapter 2, and then he summarizes again the rest of chapter 1. It's just a zoom in. So, chapter 2. He makes Adam. He makes him out of the dust of the ground. And he makes him all by himself. Like, what's with that? I mean, nobody's thinking he makes only the boy elephant and then he wanders around for a while and then he makes the girl elephant. We're not thinking that either. So he says, hey, let's do the selfie thing. Can we get together here? Let's go make this. And he makes the male alone. Wow, this is totally weird. It has got to really mean something. It has got to really have something we're supposed to get out of it. So he makes the male all by himself. And then what does he do with Adam? He takes him around and says, okay, Adam, here's the garden. I'm going to teach you how to tend it. I'm going to teach you how to take care of it. He gave him instructions about the garden. Did Eve hear? Hey, take care of the garden. You know you're supposed to do this. Here's how this works. Here's your responsibility. Did Eve hear any of that? She didn't. Then what does he say? He starts talking about a tree. What does God say about the tree? Don't eat that tree. Eat that tree, you're going to die. Wow. That was the only moral choice. Everything about morality, the only thing, all of it, the entire summation of humanity's morality was given to Adam. Did Eve hear that? She never heard that. She was not there. Only you, bud. Only you. You were there. She was not there. Then, Adam looked around and went, amazing stuff around here. He says, yeah. Tell you what, you know, you're going to name that stuff. Let's go do this. So it says God formed all the animals in the ground. So God's already made them. He made them in the morning, but he's going to go and he makes them again. Apparently, he makes certain things. He says he makes the beasts of the field, the birds of the air, so that Adam can see God's going to go make them. And he goes around and I'm sure Adam would see things like, oh, look at that thing over there, man. That's wild. Yeah, let me show you. God makes one. Oh, that's where they come from? Yeah, that's where they come from, Adam. Like, I just make them out of the ground. Oh, what do you want to call them? I think I'm calling it an elephant. That's a great name, an elephant. Okay. Wow, okay. So, watch this. See what I'm doing? Watch this. Wow. Yeah, watch this. Ooh, wow, look at that milk. Okay, what do you want to call that? I don't call it a cow. Oh, cool. Yes, call it a cow. Great. They did that all afternoon. And Adam had named everything he could see, all the stuff, all the creatures, and what they were out doing is they were not looking for a helper for Adam. And God had spoken the incredibly powerful words of God that speak reality. God had spoken, it is not good for the man to be alone. I mean, can you imagine? I just see the whole creation, just the whole entire universe, just the whole creation just shudders. Creative words of God have just said, it is not good. And everything just goes. Anybody here take a guess at why was it not good? Why did the creative voice of God speak those dark words into the creation? What was Adam? What was he? Adam was.
Male.
And what's male? Male of what? Male of the species? Male of, and what is the species? Good, you're doing good. This is not simple, straightforward.
Man,
and what's man? Man is
leader.
Okay, keep going. Genesis 1:26. What did God create?
Man.
God created man. He's the image of God. He's the image of God. We have the image of God, but we only have one part. Remember, they were making an us. They're making a picture of the us. They're making a picture of the us, and yet they only made man. It's like, oh man, did we forget something here? No. You and I are supposed to learn something. God made only the man so that he could speak those incredible words into the creation. It is not good. So he could say that. And you know what? Many of you have experienced that, and you will experience that. There's something inside you that yearns for a connection with other human beings, and you'll find for almost all of us, there's an incredible yearning to connect with the woman. God made that. And so the responsible for part got made. You take care of the garden. You get the instructions about what to do and not do. You name the animals. But you know what happened? Now, we've got all the business taken care of. I'm going to make a helper suitable for you. What was she? She was a helper suitable. Wow.
PowerPoint. Male was created first alone. Male was given responsibility in the creation. Care for the garden. Male was given moral instruction, not to eat the fruit. The male named the animals, which is headship in creation. The male's aloneness was declared not good by God. The male was unable to find a suitable helper in the creation. And that's why God had to make all the animals. It's like, okay, you know what, Adam? You know, you're not complete here, right? Yeah, then I don't feel complete. Well, like, what about this elephant? What do you think? I mean, you can love that elephant. Yeah, so you have to push over trees. I mean, they got to build a garden. And that elephant can be really helpful, but you know, to be honest, I just don't feel like that elephant could unite with me. I don't feel like that elephant, I don't know, God, there's something I'm wanting here. I don't think it's there. Well, all right, what about the cow? You get hungry a lot, you're a grown boy. I mean, you know, you have milk. Yeah, boy, I appreciate it. These are amazing. I love these things, but I don't know. I'm not sure you're going to make anything out of that dirt. What's going to meet this need? I just have a feeling it's not coming out of that dirt. Really? Is that what you're thinking of? You're thinking it's not coming out of the dirt anymore. There's nothing in the creation. The whole creation is yours, and it's all, I'll tell you. Trees, the animals, it's all yours. Really? You're not happy? No, I just... There's a part of you, God, that's not there. So we fix that, Adam. And out of his side, not out of the dirt, not out of anything dead, but out of Adam himself, God makes him. And she's a helper, suitable for him. The woman was created as a suitable helper for the man. What are we supposed to learn from the creation of man together? Adam and Eve, though through the relationship of marriage, were created to picture the love that exists within the Trinity. That was the selfie. There it is. It's not so much just in the biology, the male and female, but it is in the role relationship that exists there. They were created to express that love through relational roles. Adam, the man, loving by caring for, taking responsibility for, and leading into good, a masculine expression. Eve, the woman, loving by entrusting herself, uniting with, following, and helping, a feminine expression. So Eve gets created. God brings her to Adam. What do you think Eve would be in Eve's head? Like, oh, wow, that's interesting. So you're already here. Okay, so where's your spot? Your spot's over there. Okay, so should I be over here? Maybe I'll make my garden over here. Is that what I'm supposed to do? Oh, she's going. I'm here for you. I'm here for you. You're responsible for all this stuff. You've been given the job of taking care of all this stuff. This is your world here. And I'm here for you. That's how they would have thought. That's what's in their head. Way back when you got started. And then God says this. God saw all he had made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. And after Adam and Eve come together, then it's like, you know, like in those sci-fi movies where the crystal finally gets in the right place and the whole thing lights up. That's it. Adam and Eve come together, the image of God. The whole thing is just a backdrop. The whole thing is just a canvas. The whole thing, all the trees, the animals, everything. It's all just a backdrop. Even Adam himself is like, nah, he. That's it. Right there. The image of God. And now it's very good. Now it's done. Because it's a picture of God. It's not about male and female. It's not about love in the human sense. It's about God. Conclusions. I glorify God by expressing the image of God as a human being generally, and also through the gender God has given me as a man or as a woman. God's pleased when the picture of divine character created in womanhood and that picture created in manhood are clearly distinguished, honored, aspired to, and expressed. And there's a lot of things God's made about me. I used to have brown hair. And when I would express my brown hairedness, that doesn't mean glory out of that. A glory to God. It wouldn't mean, oh, brown hair, brown hair. God made me a certain height. He made me a certain weight. He never gave me the ability to throw a basketball. There's different things that, you know, I have and don't have. But a lot of them, in and of themselves, they don't glorify God. They glorify God for what I do with them. My masculinity glorifies God in and of itself. There is a dimension to who you are. There is a dimension to your nature as a human being, as either male or female. And God is glorified simply by the presence of that dimension of who you are. You glorify God as a man. You glorify God as a man. There might be things inside you that sort of recoil away from that, like, well, I don't even know why, what that even means. Our whole world is so messed up on this. You go back a couple generations, and it was pretty clear to everybody. Today it's clear to almost nobody. Nonetheless, it doesn't make any difference. It's still true. You glorify God by a dimension of your life that you might not even hardly ever think about. God did not create anybody to be androgynous. So, we're going to ask a couple questions about radicals, and then we're going to take another quick break, and then we're going to wrap it up with honoring women. So how can you grow in the quality of the man that God's given you? This is sort of a test of how you can actually do this. So, if I were to ask you guys, when you hear this, what are some qualities that come to mind where you go, I want to be more of that because I think God is that and I want to be more of that. This is the Father side of God. I sense in me a drawing to be like that. I want to be more of this. You got anything you'd like to be more of? It's not a very masculine response.
Less fearful.
Less fearful.
Amen.
Okay, so less fearful. What would be some practical steps that you can take to be less fearful?
Face those things that come to you that are challenging.
How would these ideas help you in that?
Not back away from being what God created us.
Said, God, you created me for this. I mean, if I'm just a guy, it's like, I don't know, I'm so afraid of this. This kind of weirds me out. This must not be my gifting. I'm just kind of going to do this. But if I go, no, God, you created me as a man. I think you want me over there. That's what it means. To be who you made me to be. Helps us be courageous. What would be another one? Manhood. What are men supposed to be? I want to get pretty practical here. Men take responsibility. Step into a scenario. You should go, hey, if there's something that needs to take responsibility, I step into that. You guys feel like you're doing a good job in growing and expressing responsibility.
Because here's the deal. Most of you guys, almost all of you guys, you're going to end up married. Family, you're going to want that. This is what I tell guys. You want to be ready to be married? Here's the deal. You need to not only be taking responsibility for your own life, you need to be able to take responsibility for somebody else's life. And a lot of you men your age are really still just beginning to start being responsible for their own life. You're a man. Do you know this relates to it? What does your room look like? What does your sphere look like? What does the world that says this is mine look like? Does your world look like you're responsible? If it doesn't, there is no masculinity flowing out of you. Now, I don't care if it's your skateboard or your computer or whatever. Do you rule over that well? Do you take responsibility for it? Do you go, this is my sphere, whatever it means to be properly responsible, that's how I step into this because I represent that dimension of God. No, I don't know, I'm just not bringing it. I don't know, it's so hard for me. Well, okay, that's great. You just have a long way to grow. You're growing into men that must not only be responsible for your own life, you must be responsible for someone else's, and then eventually you have to be responsible for many people's lives. I talk to college students and they're struggling, you know, living with six guys in a house to come up with their $150 for rent. And I tell them, listen, bud, the day is coming. Well, there'll still be six people living for your house in your house, but you're gonna be paying for all of them. You had better grow up. And there's a glory in that. There should be something inside you that goes, yeah, man, that's what I want. That's when I want to express love. That's the man I want to be. And that's love. It's not macho, like, I'm going to get a gun and shoot everything. It's an expression of what God is. Jesus said, I'm taking responsibility for it all. I'm dying for it all. I'm stepping into the world and I'm taking it all. You step on the field and go, I got it. I got it. A lot of you look at your dads and go, I see that in my dad. My dad's 82 years old. I go, what could that man not do? My dad steps in the arena and if he wants it done, he's got it. My Heavenly Father says, they just killed and destroyed the whole thing. I will get it back. I'll do it right. I'll do it justly and lovingly. And it's going to take several thousand years, and I'm going to get all of it back. And that's your birthright. That's what you get. And somebody needs to call you not to just be some nice Christian, but to be a man. To be a man. Because that's what God made for you. And it's a growth thing. It's the scariest thing in the world. Well, to be a woman is also really scary. They're both really scary. They're really scary for a woman to say, I will be vulnerable in the way that God calls me to be vulnerable. That is terrifying. Especially when you're just hanging around with a bunch of, you know, worthless guys. Like, I'm going to trust my life to that. We're going to get to this. What enables them to be women? Is you being a man. So, responsibility, initiative, headship. Those are yours, guys. Now, a lot of you guys are pretty young. You're still boys. You are boys. Sometimes, you kind of feel, I don't want to call them boys. No, they're young men. No, you're not, you're boys. You are growing into manhood. You're boys. The girls up the hill, they are girls. They are not women. They are girls. Because you're not there yet. You are growing into it. You are becoming that. But God wants you to aspire to that because manhood is something. It is something. You set your sights on it. The whole world will go, I don't pay attention to that. Just grow up and buy more video games. And God says, no. I've created you male to be a man. Own it. Grab it. Pursue it. And it's lived out right now. What does your stuff look like? What are your household responsibilities look like? What do you bring? Would people look at you and say, I see a growing manhood in him. I see a growing manhood in him. He is taking responsibility. He is taking initiative. He will say, yeah, I got it. Yeah, I got it. And then you follow through. That's your birthright. You will never fully succeed in it. But that's what, at the end of your life, you'll stand, and maybe your wife, and you'll go, tell me I was a good man. Tell me I lived a good life. Because that's what you're called to. So, we're going to do honoring women here. But let's take another break. And I mean, you might even want to just walk and pray a little bit. I'll give you about 10 minutes. Or you can do whatever you want. Just go play frisbee or pool or jump on the guy next to you. But let's be back in about 10 minutes.